Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million and tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Yes! That is, Earth, Wind, and Fire. You got a groove to it a little bit.
Are we just starting with Earth, Wind, and Fire?
Yes! This is the start.
Okay. Okay. How come?
Wait, listen. Happy Earth, Wind, and Fire Day, Kai.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's Earth, Wind,
okay,
and Fire Day.
Good. I didn't know that. It's
and
wow.
Now
good for
you
for knowing that. Absolutely.
It's the 21st day of September.
21st
Not quite
day of
through
September.
The night,
yes,
but we're
going
to get there.
Oh my goodness, yes we will. Hey everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. New theme music today. Making today make sense is what we do. Oh my goodness.
Yes, indeed. And I am Kimberly Adams, and I am so excited because it's Earth, Wind, and Fire Day. Yay! But it is also What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, the day in the week where we answer listener questions.
If you've got one about the economy, business, or tech, email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Leave us a voicemail if you like. Our number is 508-UB-SMART. Before we get started today, though, have to do a carbon dioxide correction. I was totally wrong. Carbon dioxide is added to beer at an industrial scale to add the carbonation. Home brewing, actually, in small quantities, you can get away with that amount of carbon dioxide that comes from the fermentation. But that's why the CO2 shortage is a big deal for beer. And I just flat did not know that. I thought it was like natural fermentation and thus carbonation, but I was wrong.
Well, who told you? Other than the entire internet, I'm sure.
Well, the entire internet, a couple of people in my Twitter feed, and also another public radio program that airs on a lot of public radio stations, whose initials are Morning Edition, did a minute and a half on it today.
Okay.
Yeah. So
this is the point of the podcast, right? We're all getting smarter together. So
Exactly.
Yeah. And so now we all know. So then that SodaStream thing would actually work.
Right. Exactly.
We need to talk to a brewer. Exactly. Don't you, haven't you interviewed a guy who runs a beer company a couple of times? You should ask him if that would work.
Greg Cook at Stone. Yeah.
Yeah, you should ask him. Would that work?
He listens every now and then. All right. Well, we'll see. We shall see if I shall pursue that. Anyway, let us begin.
Okay, let's get to the listener questions. Our first question comes to us via email from VJ in Georgia. He wants to know, I have a two-part question, I should say, his questions come in two parts. I have a two-part question about inflation and Fed policy. There's a lot of talk about the Fed raising interest rates, but almost none about their plan to reduce their balance sheet by $47.5 billion from May and $95 billion starting in September. So my questions are, has the QE, quantitative easing, unwinding started as planned, and how will this help lower inflation? Kai, I think you're going to have to first explain what that question means to most people.
Yes, I will. So let's remember that back in the financial crisis, the Federal Reserve wanting to lower interest rates beyond functionally the zero that it had put them at, and also at the beginning of the pandemic when the Federal Reserve wanted to lower interest rates below the zero it had put them at, right? I mean, you can't really go negative rates. Yes, you can, but that's a whole different podcast. But the Fed really wanted to goose the economy, and they were already at what is called the zero lower bound, right? So Ben Bernanke in 2008, and then again Jay Powell in 2020, did this thing called quantitative easing. They went out into the marketplace and bought up literally billions and trillions. The Fed's balance sheet at one point this year was $9 trillion worth of treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities. And when they bought those securities, Jay Powell went to the computer in his office, the very special Fed chair computer, and created $1 trillion worth of money and plugged that out into the economy, right? And thus lubricated the economy, provided liquidity, and so there was enough money to save the economy from desperation in 2020 when the pandemic hit, and also in 2008 when Ben Bernanke did the same thing with the financial crisis. So that is quantitative easing, lowering interest rates, making money more available so that the economy can be lubricated. Now, with inflation at 8.3% as a headline number in this economy, the Fed is doing what it's called quantitative tightening. So not only is the Fed raising interest rates, as it did today, right, another three quarters of a percentage point to 3% to 3.25%, but it is also unwinding its balance sheet, okay? It is not, and that is called quantitative tightening. It is not selling off bonds. It is merely not reinvesting the proceeds when those bonds mature, right? Because the Fed buys 10-year notes, 20-year notes, 30-year notes, whatever. And when those notes mature, right, when they age out, the Fed is simply not reinvesting the proceeds. And by doing that, it is functionally not adding more money to the economy. In fact, it's withdrawing money from the economy, and it is doing it now at an increased pace. So that's the basics. To VJ's question, part number one. Yes, quantitative easing unwinding has started as planned. They started with $40 billion in May per month. They have kicked it up to $95 billion at the beginning of this month. That is per month unwinding its balance sheet. Obviously, when you've got a $9 trillion balance sheet, doing it even at $95 billion a month is going to take a while. So we're going to be unwinding the Fed's balance sheet for a very long time. Number one. Number two, how does that lower inflation? Well, as I said, they are not reinvesting the proceeds. Thus, that is to say the money is not going into the economy. They're, in fact, taking it out. And boom, longer rates will, hopefully, Jay Powell says in his fever dreams, long rates will start to go up. And that's kind of where we are.
And the wonders
is that reasonably
of
clear?
It was. And the wonders of podcasting technology mean that anybody who needs to can also rewind back if you need to listen to that one more time through to catch it.
Right.
That's totally fine.
You bet. You betcha. All right. So let's move on after that one. It's Kyle in California. Here we go.
Hey, Kai and Kimberly. This is Kyle Hayes from Eastvale, California. I want you to make me smart on why so many members of Congress are able to participate in the stock market with regards to the policy decisions that they make, either them or their spouses. This seems like a lot of questionable activity, and I want to know why this is legal and why more people are not making us think about it.
Oh boy, questionable is a generous adjective. Yeah. I was going to say, questionable is quite a generous adjective to use to describe this behavior. There's been a lot of reporting about members of Congress trading stocks at unbelievably serendipitous times, just before stock prices change dramatically, or their spouses changing trading stocks right before prices change dramatically, often trading stocks related to committees on which they serve in the House or the Senate, and they are actually dictating the policies that then affect the price swings of said stocks. Look, Kai and I don't get to trade individual stocks. Like, it's against the rules for us because we cover these companies and it's considered a conflict of interest. Why is it not a conflict of interest for members of Congress? Because they make their own rules. Congress regulates Congress. They've got some, you know, bounds around them based on the Constitution, but for the most part, their sort of moral and ethical rules are set within the bounds of Congress. So when you have people with a lot of information and a lot of information upon which they can make money, it's a pretty strong incentive to not put handcuffs on yourself to make money off of those things, no matter how noble of a person you may be. So it is legal because members of Congress have not imposed stricter limits on themselves. And yes, there is a potential conflict of interest, but, you know, there are some rules in place to at least minimize the conflicts. So there's the Stock Act, which was passed in 2012 to curtail the use of insider information to trade stocks. And that requires the disclosure of any transaction by lawmakers or their relatives valued at $1,000 or more within 45 days. However, even when they are disclosing these things, they're not necessarily consequences attached to it, right? And if you find out 45 days later, it doesn't necessarily give everybody else the leg up either, right? So the New York Times recently had an amazing piece on this, looking at the scale of this issue, and found that over a three-year period, more than 3,700 trades reported by lawmakers from both parties posed potential conflicts of interest between their public responsibilities and their private finances. Another one, Business Insider, reported that 72 members of Congress violated the Stock Act, just ignored it, by making their disclosures late, inaccurate, or not at all. And so now there is a push to do more. Several bills pending in Congress, including legislation that would require members to put individual stocks in a blind trust. We'll see how that goes. Again, there's an active disincentive by, you know, members of Congress, because they're making a lot of money off of these trades.
It's absolutely scandalous. Absolutely scandalous.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no way to put it, and that is not a a partisan thing. That is not a thing. It's just freaking scandalous.
Bipartisan, bipartisan exploitation of the loopholes. All right, let's go to Pete in Long Beach.
Hey, all. This is Pete in Long Beach. I had a question about the Inflation Reduction Act. I know that part of this, there was negotiated a minimum corporate tax, and I wondered if that had anything to do with the global corporate minimum tax that Secretary of Treasury Yellen was trying to negotiate about a year ago. Thanks for making me smart.
I almost forgot.
Yeah, great question, because it's really easy to get confused on that. So the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, did include a 15% corporate minimum tax in this country for American corporations, right? The catch, of course, is that companies have really smart tax lawyers and will definitely find ways to work around it, right? I mean, we've all heard the stories about Amazon, for instance, paying zero in corporate income tax for however long it's been around, or I don't even know. But there are, you know, many, many companies like that. The corporate minimum tax in the IRA was meant to take care of that. Companies are going to find loopholes. Let's just say that, right? Now, there is another minimum corporate tax on the agenda for the Biden White House. It is a thing that Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen feels very strongly about. It is a 15% global corporate minimum tax. And that is to make sure that companies cannot jurisdiction shop, cannot tax rate shop, cannot go to Ireland, where corporate tax rates are much lower than they are here, and thus get beneficial treatment there and not get profits and proceeds taxed in the United States. There is something like 136 or 137 countries who have agreed to it. The United States, despite being the big champion of that global corporate minimum tax, is not one of them. Thank you, Senate of the United States. So, great question. Two separate issues. U.S. corporate minimum tax, which is in effect as part of the IRA, but will be worked around by companies because they can. Number two, the global corporate minimum tax, which is not yet in force, but Janet Yellen is still working on it. She actually, I've asked her about this. She thinks it's a very big deal. Very big deal.
Gosh, we're being so cynical about politics today.
I'm shocked. Shocked. Here comes the next question from Rushi. Here's what he says. It's an email. I hear often of our aging power grid. Can you make me smart on what it would take to modernize our grid, what it would look like, how much it would cost, and who would be responsible to get it started, i.e. Congress or private industry? Also, another good question. These are really good questions, by the way.
Yeah. Y'all are making all of us smart. I mean, I guess it depends on what you mean by modernize the grid, because that means different things to different people. Because, I mean, in California, where you are, Kai, I imagine modernizing the grid would be just burying the power lines. That's not super high tech, but it would make a big difference in things. And in a lot of places, just putting your power lines below ground would modernize your grid and make it more resilient. In other places, it means switching to renewable energy and having batteries to store that renewable energy so you could use it at night. And so it depends. But the Biden administration's goal, at least when they think about modernizing the grid, is to have a carbon emissions free grid by 2035. And that is going to take a ton of money and a ton of political will. Now, there was a down payment on this, $2.5 billion to modernize and expand the power grid in the infrastructure bill. It's not the infrastructure bill. I got to stop calling it that. I spent years of my life as a political reporter talking about infrastructure bills, and it is an infrastructure law. It really happened. Infrastructure law. Okay. There was $2.5 billion to modernize the grid in the infrastructure law that is going to go towards grid reliability and allow new clean power onto the grid, but to actually create a nationwide carbon-free grid, we're not talking about billions, we're talking about trillions of dollars that it needs. And then on the second part, political will, that is going to need a combination of federal action, state actions. Electrical grids are shared jurisdictions between federal governments, state governments, sometimes local governments get in the mix. And then there are, you know, some public-private partnerships, especially in some of these renewable energy endeavors, like where there will be a public-private partnership of government and private industry working to, like, build a wind farm or to build a solar panel park or something like that. And on the state level, you know, there are a lot of state public utility commissions who are slow to act on this because the people paying the bills, you know, don't want to see their electricity bill go up in the short term to green the grid in the long term. And if you happen to be living in a state where a lot of people don't believe in human caused climate change, that argument's going to be even harder. And so these costs are real, and especially in a high inflation environment where energy prices are pretty volatile, it's a hard argument to make, but it's something that's going to have to happen if we want to limit global warming, you know, even though a lot of it's kind of beyond help.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's always, come on. There's always hope. There's always hope. Listen,
there's
we switched
always
roles.
Hope, but it's like,
we did like a Freaky Friday right here.
We
Holy
did.
Cow.
We did. I'm
all right.
Let's get out of here.
We're
going to
go.
We
we're
going to
save,
worse.
We're gonna, we're, yeah, we're going to save the last, we're going to save the last one. Oh
it's
my goodness. We're done.
Day. Yay. Okay. That is it for us today on Earth, Wind, and Fire Day. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow with the news and some smiles.
In the meanwhile, keep sending us your questions. They were really good this week. Our email is makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voicemail at 508-UB-SMART.
I can't believe you didn't know about Earth, Wind, and Fire Day.
I did not know about Earth, Wind, and Fire Day.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Olivia Zhao is our intern. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter.
Today's show was engineered by Jake Cherry, Ben Tolliday, and Daniel Ramirez, who used to do the job that Jake does, composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Bridget Bonner.
Yeah.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.